Whereas if she managed to land the plane to begin with, that's much more romantic. I mean, she landed the plane. She really was a terrific pilot. And not only that, she might have made it out if only something else had happened, if only the radio had managed to reach the Itasca in time.
So this is a compelling theory that she landed and lived as a castaway, and it's built on the preponderance of evidence. But it's all circumstantial, right?
Well, it is. I mean, it's maybe not incontrovertible evidence, at least not so far. The incontrovertible evidence, of course, would be to find the Electra, find the plane.
So we get attached to a better ending to the story.
Right.
And we can get emotionally attached to it and realize that we are so attached we're not considering the evidence with an open mind.
You're not a good skeptic.
Well, thanks to the people who never disappear when helping us produce this show, except for maybe lunch breaks. Senior producer Gary Niederhoff, operations manager Barbara Vance, and intern Sarah McQuaid.
Thanks also to financial support from Rena Shulsky David and Sammy David, and to the William K. Bowes Jr. Foundation. Big Picture Science is produced at the SETI Institute, a nonprofit scientific and education organization whose scientists study the origin and nature of life, including scanning the skies with its Allen Telescope Array. And a big thanks also to our listeners.
I'm just kidding. There are no lunch breaks. Your ears have been attuned to our monthly look at critical thinking Skeptic Check, Amelia Earhart. If you'd like to hear more Big Picture Science episodes, well, you'll find them in our archive at bigpicturescience.org.
And if you're a podcast listener but prefer listening to over-the-air radio because doing so may help you reach your destination, check out the listing on our website of radio stations that carry the program. And if your local station is not on that list, consider letting them know you like the show.
Oh, and if you listen to our show via iTunes, we invite you to leave a review on our iTunes page. And to reach us directly with your comments, we'll throw in that faint praise and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
I'll tell them you'll soon be back, dear, but what will I tell my heart?
Skeptic Check is brought to you thanks to a generous grant from the Trimberger Family Foundation. At the Trimberger Family Foundation, we hold that skepticism is a lamp that lights the way to truth. Trimberger.org.
Hi, I'm singer-songwriter Wendy Webb, and you are listening to WHFR Dearborn.
It was 80.
This is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves, and you are listening to Foodies on the 5th. And we are here with great food information about all things food on the 5th Tuesday of the month, which happens only four times per year. So let's get started with a little bit of theme, and we'll be right back with our guests. All right, welcome to Foodies on the 5th. This is about all things culinary with an emphasis on the HFC Culinary Program. The views and opinions expressed on Foodies on the 5th are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn. Hi, I'm your host, Lynn, and today we're discussing a vegan lifestyle with Deborah Leventrosser, owner of the Shimmy Shack food truck, and Lauren Panoff, who is a registered dietitian. And we're going to talk about all things vegan today. So here we go. All right. Welcome, ladies, so much. Thanks for being part of Foodies on the 5th.
Thank you, Lynn.
Okay. And if you'd like to introduce yourselves formally, starting with Deborah, I gave the name.
Sure.
Tell us what you do and how you got there. How did you become a vegan?
So my name is Deborah Leventrosser. I am from Dearborn, Michigan, originally. Moved around the world quite a bit. And now I'm settled in South Lyon, Michigan, where I am also known as Shimmy Mama. And I own Shimmy Shack, which is Michigan's first and only 100% vegan and gluten-free food truck. And we serve comfort food, familiar food that won't scare you from being vegan. So we have our homemade burgers, falafel, pita, fries, sweet potato fries, shakes, all kinds of good stuff. And I also teach at the University of Michigan and have a consulting business too. And I've been vegan for 26 years.
Okay. Lauren. Yeah.
And I'm Lauren Panoff. I am a registered dietitian. I'm from Colorado, but I live in Canton, Michigan now. I just started my own business called Chronic Planet, where I help people and their families lead plant-based lifestyles, kind of transition to it and find a way to make it sustainable and nutritious and enjoyable. And I also work for a public health and safety company in the area.
Oh, okay. Without giving the name of the company, what does that mean?
Our number one concern is public health for consumers and testing products for safety to public health standards to make sure that everything out there is reliable that has a certain mark on it.
Okay.
So people don't have to be nervous about purchasing something that's been tested to safety standards.
Okay. Are you looking for things like BPA and that sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do you make sure that when it says non-GMO, it really is?
Yep.
Okay.
There's a program for that. There's a lot of food programs, a lot of the water issues that are going on. We do a lot with water testing and food testing and pretty much all kinds of infrastructure that you'll see.
Mm. Just as a brief comment, how close are we in Flint?
Okay. I don't know.
Okay. I know my church is still collecting water, and I know a number of other places that are still collecting water and taking it up there. And news reports I hear, it's still not really, you're really not comfortable, especially when you talk about babies and children and pregnant women who are giving that to, you know, beyond themselves, and it's dangerous.
Sure.
Okay. Well, on that happy note, let's talk about vegan. And Deborah, I'll let you take the lead on this. I don't know how you want to launch into this, but what I often hear is I'm a vegetarian and don't you miss meat. Okay, that's the first thing I hear. And then when you talk about vegan, what do you miss and how much are you giving up? And I never think of it as giving up. I think of it as eating stuff I like. I'd rather have a bunch of broccoli in my hand than a hamburger. So.
Right. So I think let's start with a couple of statistics. So in the United States, 3.2% of the population identifies themselves as being vegetarian. Of that 3.2% that are vegetarian, 0.5% are vegan. However, if you've been listening to the news over the last couple of days, Dr. Oz, who has a show on television, he just named the vegan diet, quote unquote, the single biggest movement of 2017.
Hmm.
So I think that says a lot about people's awareness and interest in a vegan lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So, what is vegan?
Mm-hmm.
let's just clear that up right away.
Okay.
So I think a vegan is someone who not only eats a vegan diet, which is no animal products. So no dairy, no milk, no eggs, no ice cream, no sour cream, no meat, of course, no fish. And then also there's a lot of hidden ingredients that come from animals that a lot of people don't even realize. Mm-hmm. So we try to avoid those as well. But we also try to avoid wearing animals, driving in cars that have animals, leather seats or so forth. Now, we all have different reasons for why we are vegan, but that is the definition of a vegan. And then you might have heard a term called whole foods plant diet or a plant-based diet. That is the vegan, the diet part of being a vegan, whereas the whole foods plant-based diet people don't necessarily worry about what they're wearing or what they're driving in or other things like that, but they are concerned about what they eat. Then, of course, vegetarian is someone who doesn't eat meat, but they do typically eat dairy. And then you guys may have heard, those of you who are listening right now, you may have heard of some of these other terms, a lacto-ovo-vegetarian, a lacto-vegetarian, an ovo-vegetarian. How about a flexitarian? Do we have any flexitarians out there? That's a diet that is plant-based with occasional meat products. Of course, omnivores, we probably all know omnivores. That's probably the biggest chunk of our society. And they basically eat everything. And then we have reducitarians. This is sort of the latest buzzword. So they basically are committed to eating less meat and dairy. That's why they're called reducitarians.
I've not heard that.
Yeah. So those are just some of the some of the definitions, just to make sure we all understand even what we're talking about.
Okay.
Now, back to your question about some of the questions we hear, like you said, where do you, if you don't eat meat, what do you eat? Or mm-hmm. My favorite, of course, is where do you get your protein? And as you can tell, it doesn't look like I'm withering away here. You can't see me, those of you who are listening right now, but let's just say I'm what would you say? Voluptuous. I'm not sure the right word that I'm allowed to use, Lynn, on the air, but I'm definitely not, a skinny vegan by any means. I've been vegan for 26 years mm-hmm. and it's come a long way, and I now can eat in restaurants and go shopping at grocery stores.
Oh yeah. I remember too, way back, looking at things as simple as cake mix. And you're looking at a box of cake mix. Now I don't buy them because of all the chemicals in there. But back then, I wasn't buying them because there was beef tallow or beef fat or, some other ingredient like that. And then you alluded to things like marshmallows with gelatin.
Yep.
And there are, funny story. My old next door neighbors were like young hippies. Okay, so we got along just fine. And they're having this bonfire one night with marshmallows. I said, hey, where did you find the marshmallows without the beef bones, in there, the gelatin in there? And he just, his eyes were ready to pop open. And he's like, don't say anything to my wife.
he snuck them in there.
Well, he didn't think about it.
Right,
and
right,
so it
right.
was kind of an innocent thing. And he has a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old.
Okay.
And, at that point, they have their sticks ready to go on the barbecue. So.
Yeah. There's a lot of hidden ingredients that people don't realize actually mm-hmm. do come from animals. I mean, mm-hmm. like bone char, bone meal, things from pig intestines, are in wine and beer. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard to avoid everything. It's hard to be a perfect vegan. Let's just say that. But, I don't try to be a perfect vegan. I try to make the best decisions mm-hmm. I can. At the best point in time, while still staying true to my own values. And Lynn and everyone listening right now, everyone has a different reason for being vegan,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it could be everything from you just have allergies to dairy,
sure.
right?
Sure.
It could be that you do want to lose weight, because typically, not in my case, but typically...
she is not heavy.
Yeah, typically, a vegan diet will help you to lose weight. Some people go vegan for religious reasons. So that's another thing to think about. Or the environment. Being vegan really does help the environment in terms of resources. or you might be compassionate for the animals, which is one of my main reasons for being vegan. Might just be for health reasons. You know, you just want to be healthier. You don't want to be sick. You don't want to die at 60. You want to, you know, live a long, healthy, happy life. It could be just because you were raised that way and you really don't know any other way. It could be to encourage just the concept of peace. I think that, you know, if you do believe in this aspect of being vegan, you believe in do no harm and it, on all levels in life. And finally, hey, let's just face it, it tastes better. So that could be a reason to go vegan as well. So I think everyone's got their own reason for being vegan. And we love that at Shimmy Shack, that we get all different kinds of vegans.
I think the only thing that would be a true give up for me would be the butter. So coconut oil.
Well, or Earth Balance.
Earth Balance, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Earth Balance is
soy.
They have a soy-free.
Soy-free.
Okay.
Yep. And you can taste a little bit of the difference, but not. It doesn't taste bad at all. It tastes really good, and it melts just like butter. It's phenomenal. And they actually have a whole line of products now. They have like sour cream and onion potato chips.
Okay.
You know, which vegans can't typically eat because of sour cream. Right. Well, this is vegan sour cream. Potato chips and things like that, which is, I guess isn't the healthiest example, but but the point is, vegans now have options. 26 years ago, when I became a vegan, we didn't have options like that. It was even hard to find bread.
Yes,
yeah, you know, without eggs, and there weren't any butter substitutes, and if there were, they tasted horrible. So I mean, you were tomato sauce and pasta, you know, and salad. Of course, but there's so many good products now out there that it's really a lot easier. So if some of you are listening right now saying, I could never be vegan, which I hear a lot of, oh my God, I could never be vegan. I could never give up cheese. I could never give up milk. Well, now there's alternatives that taste as good or better than those things. And, you know, for me, it's the compassion for the animals. I think where we've come with factory farming is abominable to our species. And it's embarrassing, actually. It's embarrassing that we have come to that point of the Industrial Revolution where we treat animals like objects.
Right.
Whereas, you know, we wouldn't do that with dogs, at least in the U.S. Of course, dogs are eaten in Korea. And in other places in the world and in China. But, you know, here we wouldn't eat a dog.
That's
typically,
true.
Typically, right?
That's true. But breeders are bad news.
Well, that's horrible, so, too. Yeah. That's a whole other side of things that trying to profit.
We would need 3 hours to, to get
trying
into
trying to profit off of animal cruelty is terrible. But, you know, in terms of when people say, oh, I could never give up milk or cheese, I say, well, do you know how milk and cheese are actually made? And I honestly think there was a quote somewhere that said, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, then nobody would eat meat. Well, I think the same thing is true for dairy. If dairy farms or dairy barns had glass walls, there's no way. Because I know that there's some words that we're not supposed to use on air, so I'll be very careful with what I'm about to say.
Thank you.
But, you know, cows are impregnated. Can I say that word?
Yes.
Okay. Are impregnated basically through a farmer or a person doing it, right? So sticking something inside the cow to impregnate them. And then, so which is, of course, unnatural. And then they have the baby. And then immediately the baby's taken away. Because the only way that we get milk from humans, too, is if you have a baby, right? So if you have a baby, then you produce milk.
Right.
So the same thing is true for cows. And so they take their babies away immediately and start milking them for us. And by the way, we throw away billions of gallons of milk a year. So it just doesn't make any sense. No. So I'm kind of off on a tangent, but
that's okay.
That was, I just wanted to explain some of the reasons why people go vegan.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of a lot.
No, and any source of milk, goat milk, it's all the same process.
Correct.
Where we're wow.
I mean, if you think about it, who would want their baby taken away immediately upon birth? I mean, the cows cry at night, you know, mm-hmm. for their babies. Mm-hmm. And so this happens repeatedly. Mm-hmm. This is how we get milk. Mm-hmm. So as soon as they have a baby, they're impregnated again, mm-hmm. and they have the baby. And then as soon as they have the baby, they're impregnated again. I mean, it's this vicious cycle. So that happens to be one of my reasons for going vegan, but like I said, you all have to find your own reasons. Mm-hmm. But I guess I was telling that story to hope you will get off butter now. And we've come full circle.
Well, I do cook a lot with coconut oil and olive oil just because it's friendlier to the food. Uh-huh. It'll take a higher heat point, that sort of thing, without burning. So it's good that way.
Right. And okay. You know, you can cook without oil. I mean, you can cook with water, yes. and Bragg's aminos and, you know, other things like that to mm-hmm. avoid oil altogether. Mm-hmm. I don't go that far, but some people on a plant-based diet do go that far.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Lauren, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I was just thinking about everything you were saying. I think it's also important to note, she listed a lot of the really common reasons that people go vegan, but I think it's also important to know that once you go vegan, it's probably going to be for all those reasons, because you learn so much, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to just be the one thing anymore, because I think what happened to us is, I mean my husband and I, when we went vegan, I think happens to a lot of people. You start eating more plants, and it's like immediately the gates of knowledge are opened, and it just floods in. And once you learn, you know, where the food on your plate came from, what happens to those animals, how they're treated, and then, you know, how those factory farms affect the environment, there's just no going back from that.
Right.
I can never go back from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I originally became vegan to lose weight. And then over the last 26 years, as you just get pulled into the movement or with other people who are similar to you, just learn more about it. Mm-hmm. So now it's not about weight management for me. It's about the animals. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think you're, like you said, you change and grow as you learn more. And, you know, I think another reason, you know, I mentioned health for going vegan, but do we really understand what the benefits of going vegan are? And people will argue that there's not enough science behind it yet. I will argue that there is. I mean, if you want to prove that smoking is good for you, you probably could, you know. Mm. But I truly believe that, you know, your reduced risk of diabetes, or not even reduced risks, but curing diabetes, the adult onset diabetes, much lower cancer rates, longer lives, not only longer lives, but longer, healthier lives. So you're living longer and it's good quality of life. Your skin is a lot typically clearer. Your skin is how you can really tell what you eat. So if you look at somebody who's got maybe not the best skin, diet is usually one of the first ways you can cure it. Mm-hmm. Because people think, oh, lotions and creams and things like that. And no, I mean, that's good for topical, but actually your skin represents what you put into your body via eating.
Right.
Much better for the environment, which I mentioned already. So if you are concerned about that, that's certainly a benefit. More fiber. So you tend to be, and I was also warned about this, everybody who's listening. So I can't use certain words on here, but let's just say that being vegan will make you more regular. Can I say that?
You can say that.
Okay. Which, of course, is good, because that's cleansing out the body. And that's what you want to do.
That's anti-cancer right there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Certain types of cancer, for mm-hmm. sure. So blood pressure definitely keeps blood pressure in check. I mentioned cancers. Cataracts. How about cataracts? So people who have been vegan for a long time typically have a lower risk of both cataracts and macular degeneration. Our lower arthritis, lower inflammation in the body in general. And how can I say this again? Boy, this is tough, Lynn. Because, you know, at Shimmy Shack, we talk about the sexiness of veganism. So I'm going to say that, let's just say you have more energy.
Okay.
In certain rooms of the house, okay. you have more energy than maybe you once had by eating a vegan diet. And we at Shimmy Shack love that. We promote that. We recommend that.
One of the things that I often hear about is how really bad grains are. And I keep hearing over and over, I'm having a hard time comprehending it, especially if you're dealing with non-GMO. You know, if you have GMO stuff that you're ingesting, I can understand why that's bad. The only one that I'm aware of is the transfer of salmon genes into tomatoes and tomato plants, and that makes the plants less resistant to frost. Therefore, they survive, because we have a couple teaser frosts before we get into deep frosts around here. So you have plants that are able to live longer. Therefore, you have a better tomato crop. That's the bottom line to that. I do not want salmon in my tomatoes in any way, shape, or form. So if you're talking about a whole grain, if you're talking about wheat or soy or any of the ones that have been condemned, quote unquote, because they cause inflammation in the body, because they haven't been around long enough. Some grains have only been around for 10,000 years or so, and that's not long enough. I'm serious. I have not made up any of this. And I have a really hard time. It's like going back a number of years ago where they tried to say that coconut was bad, avocado was bad, all because of the fats. And I could not wrap my head around it then. And I was an omnivore at that time.
Yep.
And I couldn't wrap my brain around that, because if an avocado is, you know, you pick this thing and you peel it and you eat it, and how, you know, you're not adding any kind of fat to it. You're just having this natural thing. I don't understand how they can be bad for you.
Yeah, I eat an avocado a day. It must be. Yeah. Must be in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And your skin is beautiful. And I mean, we know now that avocado is wonderful. Now you can buy potato chips cooked in avocado oil.
Yeah. So, well, do you remember when they used to say that popcorn at the movie theaters cooked in coconut oil was like one of the worst things you could put in your body?
Yes.
And
because of the coconut oil.
Because of the coconut oil. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, now I seek it out. I don't want to go to the theaters that use real butter. I want to go to the theaters that have coconut oil.
But could you both talk about grains a little bit and why they're not bad? Why grains are not bad?
Well, yeah, I think as far as what you were saying about, you know, people saying they haven't been around long enough or haven't had enough research done, I think the biggest thing is you have to kind of look at where those studies are coming from. There's a lot of bias out there, and it's important to look at who's involved in putting those studies out. As far as grains go, I mean, it's always good to eat whole grains. I can't think of a whole grain that I wouldn't recommend to somebody. You're looking at white flour and refined foods. That's the grain stripped down of basically everything good.
Right.
It's very low in fiber then. It's stripped of a lot of its B vitamins and a lot of really important stuff.
Mm-hmm. So those kind of like empty calories?
Yeah.
Is that what
you'd say? And since there's such a lack of fiber, you eat it and you're hungry a lot faster than you would be had you eaten a whole grain instead.
Exactly. Is that same with white rice too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always talk about food at the halfway point of my Saturday show, which is No Boys Allowed. We do a recipe, and I'm sure the listeners are tired of having me, okay, we're going to do this recipe, then I step up on the soapbox, and then I come back to reality again. But always talk about the difference between salt and sea salt. You know, there's a difference between what you melt the snow, how you melt your snow, and what you put in your body. And when you talk about white flour, bromated is the worst, mm-hmm. and you talk about white flour and all those, and then it says enriched. Okay, so, all right, I take out everything that's good to make it a color that I think I want to see, and then I put back chemical versions of what I took out. How is this even logical? So that's, okay, back to the grains.
It's not logical, but.
It's not. No, it's just...
I mean, there are some vegans out there who are on the far end of the spectrum who do believe that grains should not be eaten. Those are the raw vegans who just eat, and I did this for several years, where you don't cook your food above 118 degrees. And so it's a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, and a lot of nuts. And grains, you have to cook at a higher temperature to really make them work.
That makes
sense. I believe there's enough nutritional value in there to justify it. I'm not a nutritionist like Lauren is, but or a dietitian. I do believe in eating grains.
Yeah, and especially on a plant-based diet, I mean, we get a lot of protein from the grains, the quinoa,
right?
The barley, the amaranth.
And then, you know, I think one of the interesting things I was talking about before, like 26 years of being vegan, you know, and how the food pyramid has changed from, you know, the standard American diet to...
Which is also known as SAD.
SAD, right, for obvious reasons. And now we have the food pyramid. So maybe we should talk a little bit about the standard American diet and how sad it really is.
It's pretty sad, yeah. So the standard American diet, for anyone that doesn't know, it's the Western diet. It's high in animal products, high in saturated fat and cholesterol, sodium, sugar, processed foods. I mean, look around at our food system and look at the abundance of things in boxes and cans.
Mm-hmm.
And also animal products. It's hard to avoid animal ingredients a lot of the time now unless you're specifically looking for it because, you know, even crackers, it'll say it contains milk or contains mm-hmm. whey protein or something like that. So, you know, the intake of these things has been associated with a lot of preventable chronic disease here in America, type 2 diabetes, a lot of cancers, obesity-related issues. And so it's important to kind of step back and think about, you know, wow, okay, we're eating this way. We have an abundance of food that we didn't have in our history. And we also have one of the highest preventable chronic disease rates in the world. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at, you know, kind of where we are, we have all this food and we also have national nutrition recommendations and resources like the food pyramid, but why is everybody so sick?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at the history of these things, of nutrition recommendations, it kind of comes down to who's involved in making them and these recommendations that come out. Who has their hands in the pot, really? And it kind of goes back to what I said about research studies and how important it is to look at who's involved. As a dietitian, I was always taught a calorie is a calorie, everything in moderation, all foods fit. And that carries through to when you look at the dietary guidelines. It's very vague if you really look at it. It kind of just puts the responsibility on us as a consumer to just kind of figure it out. Because, you know, if everything fits, okay, I'll just figure it out and eat, you know, X amount of this food group and mm-hmm. I'll be fine. But really what's going on, the government puts out the nutrition recommendations, so it's USDA heavy, and people have looked into the industry ties to the USDA, and they seem to be very cozy with animal agriculture, since they are the Department of Agriculture, and with the beef industry. So looking at you know, how the food guide was first created, there was a woman named Louise Light, and she was hired by USDA in the 80s to replace what was then called the Basic Four to come up with the first food guide pyramid that came out in 1992. And her team of nutritionists looked at all kinds of research, disease trends in America, all kinds of studies, and came back with a final version of their food guide pyramid, submitted that to the USDA, and it came back pretty obviously altered to promote consumption of animal products and change certain wording they had come up with to win acceptance of these big money-making industries. So in the beginning, they had recommended 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables, and it came back changed to 2 to 3 servings, which has changed again today, but that was how it was in the beginning.
Hmm.
They had originally suggested 3 to 4 servings of whole grains and breads, which was increased to 6 to 11 servings. And that they had suggested limiting red meats, you know, eating a lot more lean meats and white meats, and that language was removed to kind of, you know, take that out, take any bad connotations to any of the big industries out of the mix. So, and this is kind of where that statement, make half your grains whole, comes from, rather than just eat whole grains. We just have to make half our grains whole. That leaves room for us to say, hey, if everything fits, I'll just eat the refined grains and the processed food there.
Okay, so if I have a whole grain muffin, I can kind of offset that with some of that white bread that sticks to your teeth.
That would be the assumption, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
exactly. So I think, you know, these things that Lauren was just talking about is kind of a nice segue into what are some good vegan staples mm-hmm. that we eat that are on the pyramid mm-hmm. That maybe we didn't know about. And I have to say, again, I've been vegan for 26 years, and I just recently, like a few years ago, discovered olives and just how amazing olives are. And, you know, I discovered eggplant. I discovered avocado, which I never really liked guacamole. And I don't know, maybe 5 years ago, I was like, oh, I'll try this. Because I got into my routines of eating a small group of foods.
Okay. All right.
You know, kind of like the same 10 or 15 foods every day,
mm-hmm.
you know, apples, you know, melons, and then salad, and then rice for dinner, like a rice casserole. So I think, though, the message is that that's not the best way to go. And I think that experimenting with new foods that still fit on the pyramid
mm-hmm.
Is the way to go. And maybe some way we can talk about some of the staples.
Yeah. So just thinking about what's in my house, because I have not had the challenges that Deborah has, because I haven't been vegan for 20 years. I've only been vegan for about 4 years.
Okay.
So I came into it a little bit spoiled because there's so much food available now and,
right,
and so
right.
many options. I don't yeah. really have to worry about it too much. And it continues to grow today. I mean, we don't really shop anywhere special, just the chain grocery stores. And mm-hmm. every time we mm-hmm. go, it's like there's something new available
mm-hmm.
because of consumer demand, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So in my house, thinking about, you know, stuff in my pantry, I have a lot of canned beans, a lot of different types of whole grain flours. You don't necessarily have to go gluten-free. Some people like it. I just kind of like the taste of almond flour sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
We use a lot of our own herbs and spices, because when you go vegan, we kind of touched on the different kind of levels you can go vegan or not go vegan, and we make a lot of our own food. There is a lot of packaged vegan food available, and mm-hmm. we'll eat, you know, frozen burgers sometimes too, but I like to have a lot of stuff on hand that we can actually
right.
make ourselves.
Right.
So
do you, I don't mean to put you on the spot, either yep. one of you, but would you like to share a recipe or two? And recipes, as I always say on Saturday, is for me, unless you're baking something which requires precision,
yeah.
Cooking means that your recipe is basically an outline.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And,
yeah. I was just going to say, I mean, I when I cook, I go in the fridge and I see what I have. I go in my pantry and I see what I have mm-hmm. and I experiment. Now, there are certainly the occasional good recipes that you find on Pinterest or you know, vegan.com or vegan addict or something that are phenomenal. But I find for me what works the best, I live by myself, so it's sort of easy. I don't have to worry about pleasing anybody. But I can see grabbing a bag of lentils out of my cupboard and cooking them in vegetable broth instead of water, and a low sodium typically. And then throwing in celery, throwing in spinach, throwing in maybe some carrots if I have them. I'm not a big carrot person, but my dogs like them, so sometimes I have them in the house. And seriously, it's like Iron Chef. I'll go in there and just whatever I have,
yep.
I make it. So yep. I'd love to share a recipe with you, but all of mine are really one pot. Like I call them one pot meals.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be rice-based or quinoa or lentils. And then I literally throw whatever vegetables I have in there into a pot. That's sort of my my go-to.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it's a little bit different. We started out kind of like a fly by the seat of our pants cooking and, you know, oh my gosh, how do I replace chicken in this recipe? You know, kind of I think what everybody goes through in the beginning. But now we have really started meal planning a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning of the week, I know exactly what's going to be for dinner every night. We have a one-year-old son, and so trying to raise him vegan and make stuff that we know is the right consistency for him and will be, you know, a good variety of foods for him to try. So for us, something might be like a tofu scramble. It's probably one of my go-tos.
Okay. And how do you make that? So you take extra firm tofu and then you just crumble it?
Yep.
And then you throw vegetables in?
Yep. Any vegetables we have, a lot of garlic, a lot of nutritional yeast.
So you put nutritional yeast in with the scramble?
Sometimes I'll do that and some turmeric, make it just for color usually.
Yeah. And then is there like a liquid or like you use water or?
Sometimes we'll use olive oil. Sometimes we'll use broth.
Okay.
Yeah, and you just mix it up, throw some spinach in there. Really, whatever seasonings you like. A lot of
that
times I'll use.
So good,
doesn't it?
Sun-dried tomatoes.
I'm gonna go and make some.
Yeah, it's super easy.
I'm gonna expand
too.
My horizons tonight. So, you had mentioned raising a baby vegan.
Yeah.
So I know that you and I have talked before about this, and like, can I tell the story about the doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she went to the doctor.
Just about to ask.
Yeah. So she went to the doctor, and I don't have kids, but I guess somewhere on the form, it's like, you know, high risk concerns or something like that. And he wrote vegan diet on that area. And I'm just like, what? I would love to see, you know, standard American diet or omnivore down there as a high risk.
Right.
And have vegan be normal. That was so crazy.
Yeah, it's on his medical chart. Every time we go in, I look at it, it's like jaundice at birth. Vegan diet. They're just on the same page.
Oh my
but,
gosh.
You know, a lot of doctors are coming around and you just kind of have to find one that's going to be in your field.
Mm-hmm,
They are, you know, the one that we have. She's on our side. You know, they just have to do these because it's protocol. But
So is there any special care that needs to be taken for raising a baby vegan, or is it just so natural to feed somebody vegan that you don't even have to think about it?
Well, I think with raising any kid, maybe especially vegan kids, but any kid, nutrition is so important.
Oh, any kid.
There's a lot of concerns about, you know, oh, my kid's going to be malnourished if he doesn't eat meat or drink whole milk when he turns one. And it's just not true. You know, we have a variety of food in our house, and except for consistency needs, like when he didn't have any teeth. Obviously, we had to puree foods, you know, the different stages they go through as they get teeth and their digestive system grows. But now he eats what we eat.
Right.
You know, it's
How
super
old is
easy.
He?
He's 16 months.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, we send him to daycare with the food we ate last night.
So does daycare ever try to feed him something that you don't approve of? Or are they allowed to do that? Or do they only eat what he brings with him?
Nope, he only eats what we send with him. A lot of the daycares, they do have vegetarian diets, so that's nice. They do have those foods available if we need them, but at least the one we go to has been very accommodating as far as, you know, he just eats what we send him, and it's totally fine.
So I also heard that, you know, how a lot of kids get ear infections?
Yeah.
And they get the tubes put in
right,
or whatever.
Right.
I've heard that could be caused by dairy.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys heard anything about that?
No.
Or has your son had any ear problems?
I have heard that, and he has had zero ear problems.
Oh.
And he's never eaten dairy. He, you know, he was breastfed, obviously, for the first year, but now he just gets a variety of non-dairy milk, unsweetened, plain, so there's no added sugar. But the question I get a lot is, what non-dairy milk should I feed my toddler that's going to replace breast milk? And there's not a one-to-one. It's about variety and the different nutrients that each one offers. You know, hemp milk versus soy milk versus almond or cashew. There's varying levels of calcium and protein, and B12 is added to some of them. So it's just important to give him a variety of them. And
so you give yours a variety?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Does he like one more than the other?
He doesn't seem to. You know, I think we're pretty lucky. I'm going to air knock on wood here. I've heard some more difficult stories that people have gone through, but he's pretty easy.
And so far as his weight, according to the charts, and his height and all that business, how does he compare?
Yeah, so he was about a month early, so he was born pretty low, fairly low birth weight, but he's caught up on time. He continues to trend upward. We look at his chart every time we go in, and he's totally on track. So
okay, So he's not really missing the cheeseburgers.
No.
Nope. You can't miss what you've never had.
That's right.
Okay. No, that is one of the early on we talked about, you know, where do you get your protein? And that's one of the problems, quote unquote, with regards to babies, is that they're not getting enough protein because they don't have whatever, you know, the burgers or the milk or whatever. And you're telling me that that's not true, that the size is fine, the height is fine. And you're right, he started out behind, mm-hmm. kind of behind the line a little bit.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. that's wonderful.
But I also think adults worry unnecessarily about how much protein they're supposed to have. I don't even know like how this all started, if this was like an animal agriculture company who started this or something, but we don't need that much protein, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and the protein that we do need can be built on the amino acids mm-hmm. that we eat.
Right.
So as long as you're eating all amino acids, your body can actually build the protein that it needs.
Right.
Now, if you actually want to go out and look for protein, I mean, broccoli, other greens, almonds, right?
Yeah.
There's lots of sources of it out there, but I just think we, for some reason, focus on that too much.
Yeah, and to not get too technical, but 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight is pretty
much... Okay.
you know, another question we get a lot of times is about vitamins, not just protein, but, you know, where do you get your B12, where do you get your vitamin D, where do you
right.
get, you know, just other vitamins. I personally am on some supplements. I mm-hmm. do take B12. I do take both Ds, vitamin D2 and vitamin D3. My vitamin D level was low, but who knows? That could just be because we're in Michigan and there's no sun.
Right.
I just saw today on the news, like, we haven't seen the sun much since... was it late November, early December?
Really?
Yeah.
I know it's been a while.
Can't
yeah.
remember.
I was like, oh, wow. That's encouraging. So anyway, yeah, so I take D2 and D3, B12. I take a multi, and then I take a vegan form of fish oil, which is like flaxseed, basically flaxseed oil.
Uh-huh. Right,
yeah.
right.
And that kind of helps keep you regular, but it also helps, flush things out mm-hmm. you know, of your system.
Right.
And okay. I think other people are on other... kinds of supplements, right?
Yeah, I think, like you said, vitamin D is probably one of the most important ones, especially living this far north of the equator and obviously not seeing the sun very much. Vitamin D is pretty much important for everyone, especially living up here. But B12, like you said, and iron is another one to pay attention to, especially for women.
You know, and I think you definitely have to be careful. I think you need to get your blood levels checked. You know, just be proactive with your health. You know, that's mm-hmm. what this is about. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, I did want to touch before we end the show is on the things that some people don't realize are not vegan, but not related to food. So
please do.
Like
yeah.
leather goods.
Right.
So, you know, if you've ever watched a video of a slaughterhouse, it's pretty graphic and horrible. And obviously they use the hides from the animals to make boots, to make purses. And I just wish we were all a little bit more conscious, you know, about that. So when we go to DSW Warehouse, the shoe store, or we go to Payless, or, you know, we go to Walmart, or wherever we go, take that second to look inside and see, is it man-made or is it a leather upper? You know, they'll say leather upper usually, or they'll say man-made material. So the good news is you can go to normal, quote unquote, normal stores and find man-made materials, but you do have to look. So if there's one thing that I would wish upon everybody who's listening is to just be a little bit more conscious of the choices that you make, whether it's food or whether it's purses, because if people stop buying this stuff, then they'll stop making it. It's the law of supply and demand. So things like cashmere, things like plastic bags actually have animal fat in them. It's hard to avoid those, but you can use cloth bags. Car and bike tires.
Go back a step. What animal products are in plastic?
Animal fat.
Animal fat.
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. In a lot of them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're not, you know, there's no ingredient tag on a plastic bag.
Exactly.
So how do you know?
Yeah.
So I try to use either reuse bags or cloth bags as much as I can. So they're glue. I'm not sure if a lot of you know that glue.
Of course.
And musical instruments have boiled animal tissue and boiled bone in them. Fireworks apparently have animal-based stearic acid, which comes from the fluid of animals. Some fabric softeners and laundry detergents and household cleaners. You need to look on there. And there on PETA.org, there's a whole list of ingredients that are used in food and non-food items. Mm-hmm. So you read a label and it says stearic acid. You don't even know what that is,
right?
But if you go to the PETA website, it's tricky. They try to. I mean, they use these words so that you don't know,
right?
You know what these things are. Fabric softener, dihydrogenated tallow dimethyl ammonium chloride. Okay. I mean, who would even think that was animal?
And
right?
It has to be beef fat with the word tallow.
Right, tallow. Yep,
yeah,
exactly.
Go back a step to the fabric softener. I read this. Oh boy, maybe 6 months ago, and immediately converted, and I'm very happy with 1/2 cup vinegar in the load instead of fabric softener.
Okay.
White vinegar.
Huh.
The cheapest you can find works, okay? And I've had, at first I'm thinking, you know, that's acid, you know, I'm pouring on my clothes. And then somebody pointed out to me, yeah, but that's how you set dyes, which is true.
Yep.
If you're doing a tie dye or something, you set it with vinegar.
Yeah.
Okay. So I tried it, and I have found that I have less static. I have whiter whites, and the colors are not fading.
So do you put it in the same thing as the fabric?
In the middle of the agitator, that little cup in the middle of the agitator where you normally put fabric softener.
Yeah, I have one where it has a drawer pull out, and it's got a thing for bleach, a thing for fabric softener, and a thing for the detergent. So I guess I would put it in the fabric softener.
Yeah. Huh. And you don't have the gooey stuff.
Right.
And you're not smelling a lot of fragrances, artificial type fragrances, which is what's going into the name brand type fabric softener. So it has to be a healthier alternative. And I just stumbled upon it one day reading something, and I thought, well, this is worth a shot. And I found some last Saturday for $1.99 per gallon.
Wow.
And the usual price at a local chain is around $2.50 per gallon. And it's good stuff, and it lasts long. And so, okay, there's the tip of the day.
using
food in a non-food way.
Yeah, I love that. That would be, no, I was going to say that's pica, but pica is non-food, eating non-food items. So never mind, like clay or things like that.
Okay.
Anyway, so I guess to end the show, you know, there's a lot of resources out there. Of course, you can always go to shimmyshack.com, or you can go to chronicplanet.net, and you can find all sorts of tips on being vegan, eating vegan, living a vegan lifestyle, living a healthier lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So those, of course, are two. And come to the food truck. We love first timers. We love repeat customers, and we're hoping to get a brick and mortar drive-through location this year, which will be nice. But there's an app called Is It Vegan? So you can use that on your phone. There's also Vegan Addict, which I personally like. Then, of course, PETA, PETA. Then in terms of books or a blog, actually, there's a blog called Oh She Glows, mm-hmm. which is a good one.
Good for recipes.
A lot of recipes, too, yeah. Oh She Glows. And then Becoming Vegan is a good book. When I first went vegan, I read Diet for a New America by Robbins, and I also read Fit for Life by Harvey and Marilyn Diamond, and that was actually the book that changed my life. They don't, in their first book, they don't push veganism, but they push more food combining and getting rid of anything in a box or a can.
Definitely.
So that was my first foray into this. Of course, Cowspiracy, the movie, Food Inc., Veggiecated, Supersize Me. These are all good good movies, good books, things like that. There are so many cookbooks out there. It's hard to even pick one, but the Oshi Glows cookbook is a good one. What I recommend if we are giving our top three tips on, you know, for those who are wanting to transition, my first recommendation would be to, you know, I'm old school, so I like the libraries. And I would say go to the library, check out a bunch of vegan cookbooks. If they don't have any, just ask them to order you some from another library and they'll get them within a few days. Mm-hmm. And try them. See which ones you like and then buy the one that speaks to you. If you're more of an online person, I think Vegan Addict or Oshi Glows are good. Or go to Pinterest and mm-hmm. look up vegan vegan recipes. My second or third My first one was check out vegan cookbooks at the library, and then when you find the one you like, go buy it. My second piece of advice is experiment with foods you've never tried, or try familiar foods you have had, but in new ways.
Okay.
So kind of experiment a little
bit. Use the coconut oil instead of the butter.
Yeah, and try your mind like that, to new things that are out there. The quinoa and mm-hmm. All the grains that are out there and the cool vegetables. There's just so many cool things you can do and just be open-minded, I guess. And then number three is, you know, join vegan groups so that you don't feel so alone and so that you can learn from others. There's meetups. I'm not sure if you, those of you who are listening, know about meetups, but you can put in like, oh, I like board games, or I'm vegan, or I like to dance, whatever you like to do. And there's meetups for those things all around Metro Detroit. And then you know, there's Veg Michigan, which I highly recommend joining, vegmichigan.org, and they are Michigan's vegan organization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's also Veg News, which is a great magazine, and a new one coming out, which is called Thrive, coming out this month, and Shimmy Shack apparently is featured in it.
Cool.
Which is nice.
When is Veg Fest this year? Do you know?
April. It's in April.
April 30th.
April 30th? Okay.
Yeah. And it'll be in Novi at the Suburban Showplace mm-hmm. collection.
Okay. All right. We have 1 minute. Lauren, any parting thoughts?
Parting thoughts. I think veganism is wonderful. I think everybody should give it a shot. There's just so much out there. Like we've kept saying, there's so many resources available. There's so much information out there. And I think really kind of seeking out somebody maybe that could be a mentor for you, somebody that has been there and can help you out. Mm-hmm. I think that's really important. Mm-hmm.
And even try it one day a week. You know, ease mm-hmm. into it. You don't have to become vegan tomorrow. At Shimmy Shack, we say, hey, as long as you're eating more vegetables than you did yesterday or more grains.
It's a plus.
That's great. That's what we want. We don't want you, you know, you don't have to go overnight.
And again, it's not what you're giving up. You're not
giving
up.
It's what you're getting.
Yeah, it's what you're getting. Better skin, better digestion. It sounds like a win-win no matter how you look at it. And as I always say after I talk about the recipe on Saturdays is that it is not appropriate to get dinner from the gas station. It's just that's not where you're going to find your fine food.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, as we depart, Lauren and Deborah, thank you so much for being here. I knew when we went into this that we could probably cover at least 2 hours, and I think that's true. So thank you so much for being here today with Foodies on the Fifth, and to everyone out there, thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to Foodies on the Fifth, and this is a show about all things culinary with an emphasis on the HFC culinary program. Views and opinions expressed on Foodies on the Fifth are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio nor Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Go Shimmy! Thank you.